Well, I'm not sure what that's about, but we're joined by Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. He's obviously back from inside of the Beltway, and strange things happen when you visit there.
Does Billy Ocean really need a reason?
That's true.
Right. Some things just stand on their own, and Ocean is one of them. We might get some Hall & Oates later. Who knows?
You
know,
there you go.
These are things. They're kind of sui generis.
Absolutely. So, welcome back from inside the Beltway. A lot of fireworks going on there right now. It looks like it's going to be an interesting one.
It is. Well, you know, when we were up there meeting with the delegation, we were going to talk about the LIT, the new terminal, to talk about tariffs. But most of the discussion was about the one big beautiful bill and about whether it was going to get passed and whether it was going to get passed in time for the president's goal of the 4th of July. Mike Johnson, who we talked to, is extremely skilled at this. But this is something that's going to test even his patience and smarts and people skills, because there's so many differing factors that are involved. And it's just an enormous, bunker buster of a bill. So trying to understand what's in it. And then I think from the president's perspective, trying to make sure that what's in it will be digested and appreciated in a favorable way by the public, so that it helps and doesn't hurt in the midterm. There's a lot riding on this. We see, I think, in this president's second term, somebody who is, utterly unafraid to make big decisions, with the word big in them. And this is one of them. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, these bills are hard to consume. I mean, there's so many different issues here. If anybody was to go through it, I'm sure that they're not 100% on board with every provision in the bill. And that always kind of leaves a bad taste in people's mouth. And you have each side pulling out what the favorites are on one side and what, the negatives are for the other side. And you end up with nothing but friction. And I'm afraid a lot of times we end up with something less than the truth as well in the characterization of what the bill actually does.
Well, I think you certainly end up with something less than the truth in terms of characterization. And, of course, the other thing is that, nobody really understands legislation until it's implemented. And so there's a lot of risk that is riding on this. And both political and financial for the public. So that was really the topic that was really was du jour inside the Beltway. But it's always good to be there. One of the things that we've really done a good job of as a community is spending a lot of time in D.C. And when you make those rounds that we made last week, which were with the delegation, with our senators, with Majority Whip Scalise, with the White House talking about tariffs, it creates political and relationship capital that you can draw on going forward. So, I love hopping on that flight, getting right into DCA, and just working the halls for a couple of days, because it's one of the reasons that we're able to punch above our weight.
No doubt. Michael, let's jump into some of these issues. The governor signed a bill into law that puts new limits on how much an injured person can recover in a lawsuit after an accident. This was a very contentious bill.
Yeah, it's very contentious, but it's one of those bills at the same time where when you actually look at what it does, you say, well, wasn't it always that way? And so, this bill, SB 231, I believe, basically allows judges and juries to see evidence of not just what somebody has been billed in terms of medical costs, but what they actually paid. And this gets back to the thing that I think many of us have experienced is when you get a bill from the hospital or your insurance, and it says that for an X-ray, you've been charged $1,000, you're being billed $250. And I never really understood what that gap was, what that difference is, but I know that the $250 is what I have to worry about. Well, to this point, the juries were only able to see the $1,000, and that's what the determination was made on of award. And so to me, this is really just a transparency bill that will allow juries to have a more accurate sense of how somebody should be compensated for costs, particularly where private insurance and Medicare is being used. Now, you're close to this stuff. Is my analysis of this correct, or am I missing something in this? And I'm being
yeah. I never did understand why you would collect more than what was actually paid out, and that was never an issue for me. What was an issue for me is that if I have to pay money to an insurance carrier, and in order to get the reduced rates, why should a third party reap the benefit of the reduced rates without reimbursing me for the cost of the insurance that I paid for? And it looks like they eliminated that provision in the bill where I could be compensated for my premiums that I paid for the year in order to the beneficiary of reduced
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. You never want a policy that punishes people for doing the right thing.
Yeah, so I don't know why the way that it reads, it looks like they took that out. I know they took the definition out, but as I was reading through the bill early this morning, I was just kind of curious as to whether or not I do get reimbursed. There's some language in here that seems to say that it does, but it wasn't totally clear to me, so I'm not sure.
To me, Noel, with these slew of bills that went through, I've heard different opinions on them. Some people say it's a breakthrough. Other people are saying, no, actually, there's been a step backwards, because if you look at what the personal injury attorneys have extracted in exchange for this, they actually are winning more. To me, what I appreciate about this last session is that it's the first time we've actually been able to even have a conversation and move some legislation related to balancing the rights of victims with the public not getting fleeced overall because of a litigation that didn't need to happen. And so I'm sure that we are not where we need to get to, but the fact that we're now allowed to touch this third rail, I think, is significant and means that there is a path going forward where people who are involved in accidents are still going to be able to be covered appropriately, but we're not necessarily going to be the state with the highest automobile insurance costs in the country, which is a huge drag on people's lives and also on business.
No doubt. Let's pivot to another topic, Michael. Troop NOLA, obviously they've been trying to grow that troop. They had made some representations about the size. It looks like they continue to do so, which is good news.
Yeah, I just can't say enough about Troop NOLA and the team that is down here under the direction of Rodney Hyatt. They're a difference maker. There are only about two dozen of them. But if you look at the numbers and you look at the fact that 3 years ago New Orleans was the murder capital of the country, quite tragically, and this year might end up being the least deadly year on record, where we're outpacing the national decline in homicide by about 2.5%, I have no question that Troop NOLA is part of that. When you look at the Super Bowl, that where we actually might have been literally the safest city, a big city in America, something that the governor had promised, and I kind of, said, wow, I hope so. But we were, and, they were a part of it. And then when you look at the recent polling that shows that close to 60% of New Orleanians support them, it shows that they're doing it the right way. So I'm thrilled to have them not just continue, but to increase their presence in the city, because they're not only doing it well on themselves alone. They're working very well with Superintendent Kirkpatrick and the NOPD. They're working very well with the feds. And, you know, this is, I think, a real tribute to LSP, to Captain Hyatt, and the professionalism of everybody who's down here helping us be safer.
Michael, great news. The Plaza Tower may have finally been resolved. Tell us about this. This is, would be great news for the city.
Yeah, this is wild. I mean, you know me. I suffer from a bad case of optimism. I admit it. And even so, when I had looked at Plaza Tower, a building that I've grown to know very well since the Super Bowl, when we had to, I guess it wasn't lipstick. I guess it was we put banners on the pig. And I've scratched my head and said, man, I don't know what we do with this building, because it's difficult to understand who could come in and economically redevelop it for all kinds of reasons, the cost, the layout, the market conditions. But on the other hand, taking it down is going to cost $25 million or up. So if you take it down, then you got a $25 million hole in the ground. So my fear was that, you know, it could end up becoming effectively a zombie building that we would have more and more trouble covering up every Super Bowl. So what's happening now, which actually makes sense, is that there is a group, Lincoln Avenue Communities, which is the top developer of affordable housing for low-income, affordable housing for seniors, low-income seniors, has entered into a purchase and sales agreement to convert the skyscraper into something close to 350 apartments for low-income seniors. We know Lincoln Avenue. They just finished redeveloping the Tivoli Place Apartments at the original Tivoli Circle, then Lee Circle, then Harmony Circle, and whatever it is today. And so they're credible. I asked, I said, how are they able to do this? And apparently they're very good at layering all of the subsidies necessary, so historic subsidies, low-income subsidies, and they can make it math out. And that's just wonderful, because getting that building cleaned up, making sure that building is safe, and putting it back into commerce, and doing it in a way that it really meets a need, which is affordable housing for our older population, is potentially wonderful, wonderful news.
Is there a projected timeline? Has anybody talked about that? I mean, are they talking about breaking ground and starting in this in 2025, or?
I don't know. Let's put a pin in that for next week, and I'll find out some more particulars it from the Yeager estate. But my sense is that they're going to move on it fairly quickly. But I'll get some more timing and so much and so forth around it, because you know, when I look around the city of Newell, I see a number of projects beginning to go that have been problems of blight and misuse. You've got Plaza Tower, you've got Charity, which now has gotten local and I think soon state support, so it's going to start going again. The River District is beginning to break ground on the Shell building. The NSA, which has been a terrible problem down on Poland Avenue in Bywater, is being redeveloped partially for affordable housing, and partially Gino Inc. and partners, LSU and many others, are putting in New Lab, which is going to be a space for new manufacturing companies. These things that have been negatives, that have been blighted spots, are now going to be pivoted into positives and potentially be productive engines around them. And that's catalytic project is critical to cities.
Yeah. Michael, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that are not on this list, just to kind of get your thought process working here.
Such as it is.
The city, Well, the city announced the other day that, you know, the quarterly payment made to Sheriff Susan Hudson is going to get cut in half, which I think is a disaster. The timing couldn't be any worse. Also, the amount of money that they send to the DA is going to be cut. It seems as though they're in a cash crunch. They didn't figure out what they needed on a cash basis as a result of having to put up their share for the work on the FEMA grants, mm-hmm. still from Katrina and other sources. We find ourselves, and I find out yesterday late afternoon, I had a number of construction companies texted us and communicated and said, we don't, you know, the timelines that they had previously set that we thought we had resolved of 30 or 60 or whatever the days were that were put in the contract were going to be adhered to. Turns out that's not the case. And they notified City Council of what was happening the other day. And now we find ourselves, you and I, many times on this show said, it's not a function of money. We have the money. Now, it seems like it's a whole different story. We're in this cash crunch, and we're going backwards again. And this could, I mean, this is devastating to the city. And I just don't understand. You've worked around a lot of organizations. You always know where you sit on a cash basis. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and you make the plans for that. And here it is. You know, we're just making these decisions in criminal justice. You know, we've talked about how crime is going down, and that's been great, and everybody's working hard. And now the whole thing may blow up in our face. It drives me crazy.
Well, as you're saying this, I'm having PTSD from my days in the restaurant business, because what you learn when you run a small business, and I was running it when we had the first .com crash in San Francisco, where we lost 40% year-on-year same-store sales, you know, basically overnight, because these young annoying kids stopped coming in and buying $100 bottles of Chateauneuf du Pape, you know, wine. And what you learn really, really quickly as a business owner in that thing is that the P&L is all well and good, and it tells you if under ordinary circumstances your business model works, makes sense. But the reality is that the only thing that actually matters is the cash flow statement, because cash is king. And cash determines whether or not you're going to be able to make payroll, and if you're a restaurant, pay for your chicken. And when you're unable to manage your cash correctly, then you move to COD, cash on delivery. And at that point, what you're doing is you're taking money from your customers when they're paying, and you're running down to the chicken guy and giving him money so that you can buy the chicken for the next customer. This is hypothetical. This never happened to me. I'm just making this up as an illustrative thing. And so, you know, when you get into a situation like that, you're no longer managing the business. The business is managing you, and everything suffers. It's difficult. I don't understand how we got here. I'll have to try to dig into it. But it's clearly, or it almost always is, because there's been a lack of accurate and transparent accounting. Things haven't been accounted for correctly. Things haven't been planned for correctly. And you can end up in this type of a pickle. And actually being very, you know, specific, or kind of keeping the restaurant example going, one thing that all experienced restaurants know in New Orleans is that the summer is going to be difficult. So you either build up a cash reserve or you have a line of credit to get you through the summer. And if you don't have that built up, you're gonna end up closing. And we're seeing, you know, every summer we see a number of restaurants that throw in the towel because their business wasn't strong enough to build that up. And so, no, this is it's a, you know, a no good, lousy, very bad accounting issue. And whoever is the next mayor, and this is interesting. I've had a couple of the mayoral candidates ask me, Michael, what are your top economic development priorities for the next mayor? And my answer to each of them is the same. my priorities are not explicitly economic development priorities. We need a city that is clean, safe, and efficient. It's about that first level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We just need the trains to be run on time and the lifeguards to be paid. And if you focus on those basics, then all the positives, the culture and the richness and the people and the strategic location will shine through. But if we can't get the basics done of paying our bills, then, you know, the band is going to stop playing and nobody's going to come hear the music.
Yeah, I mean, my response would be even more simplistic, for the city to get its it together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because anything moving positive would be better than where we find ourselves today. I mean, when you think about how the city council has had to step out of its traditional historic role and be much more proactive, and not just stay in the legislative corridor, so to speak. Without that, I mean, we would have been down and out without your involvement, down and out without a lot of other people's involvement, down and out. I mean, you know, a lot of the successes that we have had has not been just the city taking the leadership role and actually executing.
But let me ask you this. I mean, like, there's two ways of looking at that. One is to decry leadership and say it's terrible that others have had to come in and fill a vacuum. But the other way of looking at it, and I somewhat believe this, I 51% believe this, is that the Ubermensch model of having the super strong leader, which is traditionally what's happened in New Orleans, is just too volatile. It just puts too much on one person and circumstances, and maybe moving towards a model which is, in effect, a little bit closer to what Jefferson has, right, where power and responsibility is more evenly spread. Maybe that's a more stable model, and maybe that's what we've kind of been moving towards, where others, not just the council, but also civilians, are taking more responsibility, and maybe that creates less volatility, less risk, and a more sustainable model. I mean, I don't know if I'm just talking myself into being happy, but...
Well, it may be, but I think it still comes back to the individual, you know, whether that individual is a credible leader. It's not a bad thing that GNO Inc. stepped up. It's not a bad thing that NGOs step up. It's not a bad thing that the council has stepped up. The bad thing is that it was not done at the request of the mayor. It was not brought about as a collaborative reformation effort, you know, to try and refine and improve certain things under the leadership of the mayor. That's the bad thing. All of these things kind of happened in spite of the mayor, right? And you don't have to, you know, opine on this. But I mean, that, in my view, that's the bad thing, right? And so a lot of times, no matter what the structure is, if you don't have the right people in the right places playing the right parts, it can run amok in every one of those formats for sure.
No, like,
all right, we got to get to a break.
You can have a team of superstars. You need the right coach. That's right.
Yeah. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., and we have a special guest that joins us, Michael.
We sure do, Newell. This is Mr. Worldwide, Harrison Crabtree, director of the World Trade Center, New Orleans.
Who now shares office space with Michael Heck and wonders why.
Oh, yeah, I can see him actually from here. Yeah. Looking good, Harrison.
So, Harrison, welcome to the show. You recently held a conference focused on trade and the logistics industry, which you guys always have your finger on the pulse of. How did that go?
Yeah, thanks, Noel. Thanks for having me. It's always great to be on. So a couple weeks ago, we hosted the third annual Louisiana International Trade Conference, which is our signature event as the World Trade Center, really looking at the entire trade ecosystem. So not just rivers or ports, but what is that whole ecosystem that goes into supporting trade? And this year, we really wanted to look at what is the future of trade? What do we need to be doing? How do our businesses need to be positioning themselves to capture this next wave and all of these trends that are happening in trade? And so we had really great panels looking at everything from what is the next decade of energy in Louisiana look like, to what is the current state of trade and what are those kind of technical tariffs and trade barriers that our businesses need to be aware of. And the kind of keynote panel that I think really was an exciting panel is we had all five of the deep draft Mississippi River ports on a single panel. To our knowledge, and this was the first time that all five of these ports have ever been on the same panel. And so really it was great to hear from different voices from across the industry talk about what are those opportunities for our businesses to capture and help grow the economy here in Louisiana.
So what did y'all glean from this? I mean, it's a pretty volatile time right now, right? I mean, you have tariffs on the one side. You've got shipbuilding challenges on another side of this. Major bodies of transportation of water, for example, that are in the middle of war zones. I mean, it's an interesting set of circumstances.
Yeah, it's certainly an exciting time in trade, but I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is the opportunities in trade, and there are many opportunities. You know, you mentioned some of the dissatisfiers and some of the challenges, but it was interesting to hear some of the optimism in the room. If we look at the energy sector, I know you and Michael have talked about it extensively on previous shows, but with over $60 billion of energy investments right now in Louisiana, we've got the largest LNG project in the world just 30 minutes south of New Orleans. And so there are those opportunities. I also think, you know, when it comes to some of these tariffs that we're seeing, Louisiana is actually better positioned than a lot of states because we have such diverse trade lanes, both in Asia, South America, Europe. It's insulating us a little bit better than some of these other states. And so there are opportunities, despite what we hear about ad nauseum. I think there are opportunities, and it was good to hear that from industry leaders as well.
Obviously, you have been visiting, along with Michael and others, the folks in D.C. What are they saying about some of this? And you know, it seems as though the tariffs and the approach by the Trump administration has really been dual purpose, twofold. One, trade policy, but also a lot of foreign policy elements embedded in that. And just kind of curious whether or not that causes you concern.
Yeah, so we were actually in D.C. last week. We do a fly-in with the board of directors from the World Trade Center. So Michael and I were up there last week and had some really great and candid conversations with our delegation members and their staff as well. And it's, again, as I mentioned, it's an interesting time in trade. And usually the tariffs suck up a lot of oxygen in the room and nationally, and that's what everybody wants to talk about. But it was also an important time for us to talk about the other opportunities in trade or the other roadblocks that we're seeing in trade. And we're lucky in Louisiana, we have a very responsive delegation, a very supportive delegation, understanding how important things like the Mississippi River are. And so for us to be able to talk about not just tariffs and trade, but talk about aids to navigation along the Mississippi River and dredging along the Mississippi River to ensure that ships are able to get into Louisiana, talking about things like the Ships Act, which is a huge opportunity for Louisiana to increase domestic shipbuilding capabilities. And so being able to talk about that whole ecosystem with them is important. And, you know, just before I got on this call, I saw we announced a trade deal with Vietnam. And so it's going to be an interesting time over the next few weeks. I think April 9th is the day we're all watching very closely, because that's when these reciprocal tariffs are scheduled to go back into place. So watching that very closely, I think we're going to start to see now that the big, beautiful bill has gotten kind of through the legislative process. I think we're going to see over the next few days a number of trade deals being announced. And so for us, it's an exciting time to be able to meet with our delegation, not just to talk about the importance of you know, trade in Louisiana, but talk about what are those problems that we need to address right away. And to be able to have the Speaker of the House, the Majority Leader, is an invaluable opportunity for Louisiana.
Harrison, is there a country that's out there that we have not achieved a trade deal with yet that is, like, top of mind for you?
There's a lot. You know, I think Europe is an interesting market for us, especially from a foreign direct investment standpoint. We see a lot of projects coming from those regions. And so when we talk about them, it's not necessarily the tariffs that they're concerned about. It's more that uncertainty. So would love to see, especially with the European Union, a trade deal and hopeful that we have one by the 9th. You know, we increasingly see a lot more trade lanes from Central and South America. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to capture some of that. And, you know, as I alluded to earlier, some of the shifting dynamics of trade, we see a lot of that, you know, kind of becoming closer to the United States in that Central and South America region. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for Louisiana to capture those trade flows.
So looking ahead for the rest of this year, what are you guys, what will y'all be working on and what excites you the most?
Yeah, so we're going to be working on a lot of things here at the World Trade Center and GNO Inc. in that trade ecosystem. I know one of our biggest priorities is Louisiana International Terminal. I know, again, you and Michael have talked about this quite extensively, but this is a generational investment for Louisiana. It's our opportunity to once again plant our flag in the ground as a global leader in supply chain and logistics. But this project's also important for the rest of the United States. If you think about all of the companies up in the Midwest that are exporting their products out of Louisiana, this is a huge opportunity for them as well. So really working hand in hand with Michael and the GNO Inc. team to support this project, you know, and hopefully get this groundbreaking by the end of the year. This is going to be a huge priority for us.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on having a very successful conference yet again, the most recent LIT conference, the third, I think you said it was. And I know when y'all first kicked it off, it was a big, big deal. And having all of the panelists from all the different ports together, hopefully that's an indication of things to come with greater cooperation amongst those.
Absolutely.
Those facilities for sure, because their strength in numbers, no doubt about that. And keep up
Absolutely.
The great work and have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thank you, Newell. You too.
All righty. We'll be right back with Michael Heck and his final thoughts when we return. Stay with us, folks. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, let's talk about Walmart and a program that they have and some New Orleans companies that made pitch to get shelf space in Walmart. And tell us about it.
Yeah, thanks, Noel. This is a nice feel-good story to end it. This is something that a program was started in honor of Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart. They basically go around the country and hold open calls for local small businesses to pitch their products to try to get on the shelf at Walmart, which is, you know, for many companies, it's a dream, but they have no idea how to get there. So we teamed up with Startup NOLA and with TechPlug, a local tech and health organization, and we were able to convince Walmart to host the final stop of their Road to Open call right here in New Orleans, which has never happened before. There were, I think, about 75 companies that applied. It's kind of like an America's Got Talent type of deal. They had the last one here, and five companies out of the 73, I think is the number, got the golden ticket out of New Orleans to go pitch again at Walmart headquarters in Bentonville. And we were thrilled that one of the five was actually a New Orleans company, a local beverage startup, El Guapo Bitters, led by a great entrepreneur, Krista Cotton. They do these really exciting bitters that you put in fancy mixed drinks that are probably above your or my taste. But anyway, it's nice to kind of have this idea, get Walmart to agree, and the fact that it was a local company was one of the five that got a golden ticket to Bentonville was just, I guess a cherry in the mixed drink.
When will we know if any them are chosen? You know, we've had Krista Cotton on the show. You've had her on it with us. She's very exciting individual and a really exciting company.
Yeah, I got to ask Krista. I think she goes up to Bentonville. Golly. Let's see. She goes up in October. So I guess we'll know after October if she's actually going to get the prize. But, you know, it's I do think it does speak to the culture of Walmart, that even though they're this behemoth, that they still do this type of stuff. And part of it's just smarts, because they find exciting products like El Guapo that they can sell a lot of. But I do think, and if you've ever been to Bentonville and visited, that it is part of the culture of this place that came out of Midwest America, that they still do feel a very real kind of Main Street connection. Now, there are other great innovators and companies, but they might be having $50 million weddings, out in Venice. I mean, it's just a different model. It's just a different thing. You know, I got to tell you this.
It looks and feels different.
I was taking a walk with my wife through City Park the other Sunday morning. We walked by and there's one of those gondoliers in City Park, and my wife yells at the poor couple in the gondola, "Hey, Jeff and Lauren, how are you doing?" And they just looked at us like,
"Oh, what a show that was!"
What a show! I don't know. Anyway, I wasn't invited.
I was surprised you didn't make the list, man. I was shocked you didn't make the list.
Yeah, I didn't make that.
Totally.
I don't know. I had too much to do back here to go there anyway. Venice is hot this time of year. It's not the best time to go.
No, no doubt. Well, Michael, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great 4th of July weekend. You guys staying in town, or y'all going to get to do something?
Yeah, no, we decided we're going to stay in town. I've got some fried chicken coming in from McCarty's, and we're going to have fried
there
chicken and champagne and wave the flag, and, looking forward just to hanging out. Both of our kids are in town, so we're going to relax.
Fried chicken and Vouv. There you go, baby. All right, Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., thank you so much for joining us, and have a great 4th of July.
You too, Newell. Happy 4th of July to everybody.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back, we'll visit with Bernie Pensinat, political analyst. We'll talk about the big, beautiful bill. The House, the bill is in the House now, and some Republicans there are threatening to sink this bill. We'll talk about that, other political challenges connected with this bill as well. And we'll visit with Debbie Bressler, Crescent City Countdown Club, about the 4th of July celebration.